Terraform, start over. Lord Jesus, let the soil teach us. Maybe value trees like they give us the air we breathe. No truer words who could speak are not the equal, not to scream about the beef we got. Why do we even bother to try to solve problems when in 30 years we'll be out of fresh water? Empires rise and fall. Terraform, start over. Better for us all. I'm a halt to your summer solstice. I'm a beacon of all causes.
Darkness to Light, hosted by Alan and M. Middleton.
We aim to explore what takes place at the corner of theology and geekology.
Episode 47, Audio Feed 2020-2.
Welcome to episode 47 of Darkness to Light. This is our show where we take a look at pop culture in terms of where those events intersect with concepts in religion, faith, theology, and spirituality. And yes! For the first time in way too many years, four of them, as a matter of fact, we have an audio feed festival review.
Hallelujah.
It is about time.
Oh, seriously.
So, first of all, let's just talk about the logistics. We ended up this time with four people in two cars for a 3.5-day fest.
That worked out pretty well, I've got to say.
The two cars worked out in the sense that the hotel we stay at is so close. 4 minutes away. I mean, it's
max,
less than, it's maybe
it's
a mile. Maybe a mile. So being able to zip one or two of us back to or from the hotel early, middle, or late without inconveniencing.
Impeding.
Everyone else.
The other individuals.
Actually turned out all right, except that we were still at $5.17 an average gallon of gas. Minor technicality, not that I noticed. That's not important to me, spending money. That's not the only thing that matters to me.
It was oof, though.
That was oof.
Yeah, you bought me some gas cards in advance that were supposed to cover the trip, and then... Yeah, 3.5 weeks between purchasing of the gas card and the purchasing of gas happened.
But, you 2/3 of the way there.
Yeah, it helped. It helped a lot.
Oh, we also went to the early preview night. So three and a third day festival for the cool kids.
Which would be you and mom, because Kara and
that
I
is
did,
true.
Did not attend the pre-fest.
So this time it ran from Friday the 1st to Sunday the 3rd with the 4th of July as the holiday travel day. So that's the context of what we're talking about, audio feed in Urbana, Illinois. The home of the University of Illinois, which means it's actually not a bad town to go to when the college is not in session. Two words, sushi.
Okay, burrito.
Thank you. Sushi burrito. You found all of the cool college kid hangout places, despite there being no college kids in the town.
Yeah, it was pretty radical, gonna be honest.
Yeah.
And a thing that we sort of mentioned offhand to a couple of people, and then they mentioned back, like, yeah, absolutely, is there's a really high Asian population at the university.
Right.
There, so it means that literally 90% of the places were Asian restaurants, but it was very specifically, it's like, do you want the world's best pho? Do you want the world's best bibimbap? Do you want the world's best sushi? Just like sort of in a row. And so we did end up getting different Asian takeout fast food every single day instead of eating at the festival, pretty much every day.
The one drawback of that is when we went there our first time, we had the world's greatest pizza by the slice place.
Rest in peace.
Godzilla Pizza, even though that wasn't your name. That was just the mural on the inside of your
But rest in peace, location. Godzilla Pizza.
You have to expect that with a college town. Not every restaurant is going to last forever. You have to be flexible. Now, I wanted to talk, you know, obviously about this fest in general, but as a way of talking sort of, again, more broadly, reminding people about what makes this fest a little different, I have a game.
Okay.
Don't look.
Okay.
Because one of the events that Mom went to included an audio feed bingo card. So I'm going to ask you some of the blocks on here. Which of these could, between us, could we have checked off? And it kind of gives a primer for some of the things you might see if you come to audio feed. Because it's a different kind of fest. And it's a different kind of Christian fest. A kilt.
Like 14. Which was shocking because it was in fact a smaller venue, but I think we saw nearly as many kilts as we did usually.
All the kilt people still came. That's important.
And not surprising.
I like the kilt people. There's something. It's a fashion statement. It's practical if you're camping. It works in a lot of ways.
You are not a kilt person, but you are pro-kilt person.
Yes, exactly. Though, when you graduated from college, someone in your family wore a kilt to the ceremony? Let's just leave that as a mystery. Now, this is one that relates to the goth Christian band Leper, Scott's Veil.
I missed it. I missed it, and I was so sad that I missed it, but that was like the number one thing we were looking forward to was Scott in his full-length black lace mantilla.
And at least one day, you could have crossed off both of those boxes, kilt and veil. Not on performance day. That was, I believe, hanging out at the fest day.
Oh!
But
yes!
I believe it is not shtick. Scott, the front man for Leper, he does not go anywhere without the veil. And we had some miscommunication and some schedule things, but we mentioned there were four people at the fest. That included your roommate, Kara. And I was really hoping that she could experience the drama of Leper.
I'm not sure if this is on the bingo card, but this is a song about death. Yes, Leper.
That is
we know.
That is the inside joke about Leper. This next song is about death.
Yes, they all are. Because
they all are. Elephant ears / funnel cake.
Acquired deep fried Oreos, which
I'll allow it.
I call acceptable.
The whole concept is fair food. That counts. Now, this is one I did not see. I did not know the context of it, but I saw this one on a chain link fence near where the bleachers are, walking from the metal tent and the parking area into the main fest. Kevin Slareth's red swim trunks. That evidently is a thing. They were stapled onto the... It's as part of their band announcement involves. It is that sort of event. One, sadly, I did not see. I hope it's just for travel and safety reasons. Lime green beard guy.
Yeah! I don't...
I mean, I hope it was just a matter of precaution and not, you know, it's been 4 years. I hope lime green beard man makes it back next year.
No one even knows what his name is. He's just lime green beard man.
Mom did see blue and purple beards, so we actually counted that. You know, not the same guy, but
still,
lime green beard guy. How about Harry Gore?
Very important. Saw him every single day.
We even chatted with him.
Good.
For a little bit, yeah. How about cassette tape merch?
Oh, I missed out on this one. And let me just say, I am still saying that next time that we go to an event where merch, tabling, more discussion is happening, where we're less there as attendees and more as promoters,
Right.
We should absolutely burn like two of our episodes to a cassette tape. Do like, I don't know, Daredevil and then like
one of the monster episodes.
One of the monster episodes, yeah, Nephilim or something, and just burn them to a
cassette.
To a cassette.
That's not bad.
Or maybe maybe do like Over the Garden Wall.
That's not bad. Something. And vampires.
Yeah, and vampires.
I like the vampires one. I like the Nephilim one. That had a lot going on, too.
Vampires one is really good. Anyway, we'll figure that out.
Yeah, because this year we did tape up some flyers for Darkness to Light on some porta-potties. But other than that, we did not do anything Darkness to Light related, you know, directly. We didn't do musician interviews, hand out our Darkness to Light business card, or anything like that. Like you said, we were there just as attenders, at least this time. Now, I'm going to give a string here that I didn't see, Mom didn't see, I don't know if you saw. So, and then this will maybe lead us into the smaller size of the fest this year. Swimming noodles.
Very few of them.
Ninja?
Okay, I was told there was a ninja. I didn't lay eyes on the
but
ninja.
But would you? Would you?
That's the question.
That's the question. I know some years the childcare, the kids area is in the past has been, you know, pirates versus ninja versus something, you know, something in terms of each day they dress separately. So I did not see that. Similarly, toga. We've seen togas before. Again, I think a lot of these, circle pit. I think I did.
I saw one.
Okay.
I saw one circle pit, and I also saw something which was probably the sweetest thing I've ever seen, which was a 16 to 18-year-old desperately trying to get a circle pit started, and one, like, 50-year-old goth in full black and red makeup getting up in order to
do a two-person circle pit.
Which was, okay, honestly, probably the most endearing thing that I saw the entire weekend.
Other thing I did not see this time is the game Buck Buck. That's the sort of the leapfrog with the multiple people. The line gets longer and longer for leapfrog. And I think that is all because there weren't any youth groups there.
No.
And I think that's clearly a COVID / parent / church sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send you to church for an hour and a half.
Yep.
Once a week, but not to live with 17 people for 4 straight days in a tent.
Yes. And also, because the key for most of us is then it means sprinter vans or school buses.
Right, exactly.
And
so
we're not going to put 28 kids on a school bus for 6.5 hours to get to the festival to stay in a tent where we don't have showers.
That was the biggest, I think, COVID-specific
impact
that I saw. One appeared to be maybe 25-year-old with 7 or 10 junior high schools around them.
Yeah.
So that may be one youth group that I saw other than that. And so, again, I think that's clearly, you know, a letdown this year because it was smaller.
Yep.
The whole they have the fairgrounds, but where it was cut off, you know, the part that they were using this year didn't go as far back in terms of both camping and stages. I think probably say 3.5 music venues.
Yeah.
Down from probably closer to 5.
5.5.
Yeah. You know, and only half a speaker venue. Again, I think there was that one that was shared. Down from probably 2 speaker venues. And that was the...
Considering there was no Imaginopolis.
No Imaginopolis.
That's always been our favorite part, is getting to go to see the lectures of the speakers and the more like academic, you know, commentaries, the theologians, the book like groups, things like that.
Both from the University of Illinois, and then there's also specifically a seminary in the town. You have a lot of professors writing books and thinking and talking about these sorts of things.
And having some downtime in the middle of July before they have to start prepping for classes.
Exactly, exactly. That was when the last time we went, the theme was Brave Little Animals or something to that effect. So they talked about Narnia and
Nim
and all of these things, comparing, and then talked about the Bible's view on, animals and creation and saint stories and legends involving animals and all of that. And you, so you missed out on a big chunk of that intellectually, theologically engaging content, which was a shame.
Yeah.
It seemed like the past fests probably had about 3,000 people there. This one was probably more like 1,000, I would guess, for context.
Just I would
everything
concur.
Seemed small. The merch area, there were fewer vendors. There were fewer, musical venues. There were fewer record labels.
Yes.
That would have a tent for half a day and have all 10 of their artists. So I think that was one of the...
I think that was the biggest probably difference on the music side is that I didn't see any record label. Representation.
Right. And for one thing, they bring newer music, newer bands, younger bands, bands with Kickstarters active or new records out. So it really was a lot of it, sort of a lot of the old timers.
And also the regulars.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Because we were very excited. We were able to see Insomniac Folklore. Yes. We were able to see our good friends, the Castros. Yes.
Harry Gore.
As always, like, again, if the festival didn't happen, Harry and Glenn Kaiser would probably just show up.
And busk anyway.
And they would just be in town busking. Like.
And the other thing that I noticed, and I think this is similar to the record labels who take over, pay for.
That's the thing.
You know, a day of a tent or something mm-hmm. like that, was that the organization that runs the Goth tent.
Yes.
For whatever reason, that organization was not involved, and the Goth tent was physically one of the larger music venues. And it had I remember the last time the Goth, sort of a two-part tent,
mm-hmm.
where it had the larger side was speakers and bands and all that. Then they also had like a meditative, quiet, /coffee/relaxing area. That was a shame. There looked like there was a new Goth organization trying to get going, the Grave Robbers, I think they were called.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem nearly as large, and it didn't seem...
Thing. Grave Robbers is also like a musical artist that was kind of doing more the Imaginopolis thing of like,
right.
we will sponsor this, but it wasn't the sort of independent
right.
group of like Black yeah. Sheep Tent.
So a lot of those things that were negative in the sense that everything was a little bit smaller. Pause to say, I really enjoyed it.
Yes, absolutely. And I was sad because it was smaller, and I yeah. was really worried that Carol was going to be disappointed.
Right.
Because this was her first year attending right. with us. And
we have built it up over a number of years
because
we love the event.
And the thing is, in the past, it has hosted people like the Oh Hellos and the Grey Havens. And most importantly, Coyote Kid, the band formerly known as Mara in the Mainsail, which are her three favorite bands basically of all time.
Yeah.
They literally rank up there with, like, Muse in her brain. And the fact that none of the three,
yeah.
for a combination of travel reasons, because physically all three of those bands are very far away from Illinois,
yeah.
Plus sickness, travel constraints, you know, general personal finance crunch,
yep.
Et cetera, were not able to make it. And that was very... So
that
very
was disappointing. Yeah, disheartening for her.
But it did mean that she, and then to another extent like the rest of us, were sort of freed up from expectations that
True.
It was,
right.
we can go and see whatever. Now, the fact that we missed Leper was literally just a complete miscommunication, misunderstanding
of which band is which. Yeah.
That yeah. it was, I'm trying to remember how we slid it, but it was
because we
Jericho
were...
Harlot, we thought was...
Ravener.
Ravener, we thought was Ignescent, and Ignescent, we thought was
Leper. Yeah.
And it was like everything was shifted one
yeah.
one to the right. And so we ended up missing two of them because we mm-hmm. thought they were the other.
Yeah.
But everyone that we did see, we did enjoy. There were lots of highlights, which we will get to. And I think the best part of the trip was getting there, looking around, and Kara being like, okay, so these are the cool Christians. And it was like, yeah, we told you. And she was like, I can't assume that everyone here is cool based on the three of you.
That is true. And that's without Lime Green Beard Guy. Even without that. Without the togas. The kilts helped,
right? The kilts helped.
Okay. And to be honest, one of the things I was worried about with Kara especially is that this is not just the cool Christians. It is actually a wide range of Christians, from conservative to moderate to you.
No. Say it.
From all sides of the theological and sociological spectrum. And I hear things that I disagree with. Mom hears that things are said because they're from these variety of perspectives. And I will say, from the stages, including the first night, I'm glad you two weren't there. This would have been a bad first impression. There were two comments that I heard that could be considered like far right or hard right politically, socially. And I did see a Trump hat. I think I saw more BLM gear. And the key, though, this was a few days after Roe v. Wade. I was expecting some drama from the stage, from group, from whatever. That wasn't mentioned. War wasn't mentioned. Elections weren't mentioned. There was no drama. Things were brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can talk about propaganda.
Yes!
The artist, in a few minutes. But it was a few days of refuge from all that stuff.
Yeah.
And a Christian event or an artistic event, those aren't necessarily... Those usually aren't free from those types of things, but I think there is the understanding that this is a broad-based group of people there. Everyone understands and respects that.
And it was a thing that I really liked because there were two different groups who I'm pretty sure do not necessarily share the same political or socioeconomic or general views of the world, even necessarily within the very broad umbrella of Christianity. Two very, very, very different types of groups who I don't think would necessarily agree with each other, both on stage saying in the middle of their shows, we understand that not everyone here agrees with us or agrees with each other, but we're glad you're here.
Right.
And I was like, man, if that wasn't a nice, good, solid thing to hear, that there was, you personally might agree or disagree with us, but this place here is not the place to do that. This is a time for all of us to breathe. Mm-hmm. And I was like, everyone collectively was like, this is a time to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
We can go back to having hard conversations in like 72 hours, but until then, we are going to drink coffee, we are going to commune, we are going to spend time together, and we are just going to have a nice, good time because we all really need it.
I do have to mention one thing about the coffee. There was a coffee area inside the one permanent structure. That's where the speakers were. And then at night, some of the musicians were. But at that cafe, what did that group refer to themselves as?
Oh, that would be the Baristi Boys.
Okay, that one made me laugh. The Baristi Boys.
Pretty sure that their tip jar had a picture of David Bowie taped to it that said something to the extent of, like, ground control for major tips.
Yes. Okay. Within the Christian circle, that's a hilarious joke. Let me just say that. That is a hilarious joke.
Okay.
For the context.
I will also say, Christian humor, dad humor, high overlap.
Thank you. Let me just run by a couple more things off the quiz that I think we may have seen. Cotton candy.
Yes, very important.
Hay or straw.
Yes, everywhere.
Because it rained during the first full day, which meant that the tromp to the metal tent was just a mess.
Just a mud pile.
So hay and straw to make that less wet, but still kind of slippery. I don't know if you experienced that.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Even by day three, it was treacherous.
A golf cart?
I think I might have missed the golf cart.
I think I saw a few golf carts. Yeah, I think some of the full-time campers who are there have their RV there the whole time. A mohawk?
Oh, like five.
Of course. And probably my favorite, the cutest, little kids with ear protection. That is a great look.
I saw Child's First Circle Pit, which was a kid, I'm going to say, about 18 to 20 months of age, wearing the giant bright blue ear protector head muffs, being held by their dad in full skinny black on black studded goth wear, holding this little infant child and running in the, like jogging in a little tiny circle. That was probably the
best
highlight.
Thing. That's a highlight.
It also worked because I looked at that kid and said, I will never be as cool as that cool baby. This being on my brother and me reference, which 36 hours later, a person would get up the courage to come up to me and Kara and say, hey, I've just got to ask you a real quick question. Shrimp heaven? Now. I was able to, in the wild, find another my brother and me fan. And, no surprise, myself and Kara were recognizable enough that he found us again literally a day and a half later on the last day of the fest when the two of us were just hanging out before we left and ended up chatting to him for like, I don't even know, an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's what he said. He had a conversation with somebody. That's awesome.
We had a great time getting around, like hanging out together. So Christian, if you have found this podcast, what's good, you cool baby?
Now, speaking of kids and babies, in case I forget this, when we get to the band reviews, we know what some of these bands have been doing during the COVID lockdowns. That's all I'm saying. Baby boom among some of the bandmates. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to leave it right there. As I say, everyone in Insomniac Folklore, I believe, had a baby in the last 3 years is what it looked like. And they all came to the fest.
As they should.
As they should. So a couple of quick things sort of through sort of the daily routine. So the first day was the half or third of a day. This was the day when we all got there. We had to get there at the fest to do all the, you know, I had all the tickets under my name and we had to get there to get our wristbands and all that. Then you two headed back to crash at the hotel and me and Mom stayed for a little bit and saw our good friend, Harry Gore. And then the person, if you've only ever heard of one of these artists from regular Christian music, this would be the one, the 70-year-old Randy Stonehill.
Heck yes. Who could still do some high kicks, so I heard.
Medium kicks.
Medium kicks.
At this point, okay?
Fair enough.
And he was the first one, and I saw this with a couple other people. It wasn't hot, it was humid there. And boy, did he have a heck of a time keeping his guitar in tune.
Oh.
So that was kind of a shame. So I think we got maybe one fewer song than we would have in the 70-minute set, but that was very good. I'll just say, for the old timers, he did shut de do, keep out de devil, just so everyone knows, he did that song. He did not do one of his favorite hit songs. You can tell this 40 years old because it's called Turning 30. So he did not do that, or Turning 40 or Turning 50, though he did reference his age more than once. But
good.
And then that night, we also was the one of the many times that we saw the previously mentioned Insomniac Folklore. I can't remember if that was the time that Tyler was wearing the ram's head.
I believe he was. You sent me a picture that just said, this is what you're missing. And it was a picture of Tyler Henschel with a ram head on. And I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
You said that it was preview day. And I was like, well, preview day is going to be the weird day.
It sometimes is.
And then I saw 10 p.m. Insomniac Folklore show. And I was like, oh, so it's going to be real
zany. It's going to be weird. Thing about Insomniac Folklore, I saw them play three times, three totally different shows.
Yeah.
And that was what they...
That's their thing.
That was their thing. Then, so Friday was the first real day. And of course, we had to start with really, I think, what Kara was most looking forward to. It's not so much something related to the fest, but something related to the hotel.
Hotel waffles.
Yes.
Yeah, this was
We always go to the breakfast included hotels.
And that was part of the thing that I did mention.
Was that part of the selling, the whole selling point?
It was as we were getting closer and closer to the event, and it became more and more apparent that certain
some of the
acts
bands
were not going to make
be,
it, that it was too far to expect either the Oh Hellos or the Grey Havens, because I'm pretty sure both are in Texas.
Yeah.
And it was just, that was was simply not going to happen. It was also July.
Gas prices had spiked.
Were already starting to spike in Texas, so like that just wasn't going to happen. We unfortunately got word that Austin Dury of Coyote Kid would have been there, but did unfortunately contract COVID shortly before and thus was not up to touring. So it was as we were getting closer and closer to the crunch time and we were getting more and more confirmations that people she wanted to see would not be there. I did sort of...
It became all about the hotel waffles.
Yeah, I did sort of hedge a, are you still certain you want to do this? Because I don't want it to be a disappointment. And she said, if all you do is get me out of the state of Ohio for 4 days, give me 3 nights in a hotel bed and 3 hotel waffles, I am content. And I was like, check, check, I can do this.
I like people with low standards. Those are the kind of friends I need. Now, one of the things we missed on the daily was the morning yoga.
Yeah.
So I think that might be something for at least one of the days next time.
Make sure to...
Buns out of bed and 10 o'clock yoga or whatever it is.
And that's the thing is, and if there is then an 11 o'clock lecture before the 12:30 music shows start...
Exactly. It would have worked, but there was some morning downtime. I did get to morning prayer and devotions a couple of times. Once at the heavy metal stage, sponsored by Sanctuary. And I have here a cassette.
Oh, dear.
From 1991. Sanctuary Praise. It's loud rock praise. Before that was a cool thing. You can just open it up just for a second.
Yes.
And tell me what, when you open up the cassette sleeve, what's the first thing that you see there?
That would be a gentleman by the name of Pastor Bob Beeman.
Who we saw at the fest 30-some years later. He looks the same, still has all that hair, although, let's just say, in the black and white, it would look somewhat different now. He was the rock and roll heavy metal pastor in Southern California, and that was the organization that sponsored the metal tent. And the nice thing was, for morning devotions, they had acoustic worship.
Yes.
They had their own coffee. We bought Mom some heavy metal coffee.
Good.
I don't think we've cracked that one open yet. She hasn't needed it that much yet. One nice thing about there just being 3 venues for music, primary venues, is that you could pretty much divide them into the loud tent, the acoustic tent, and the rock tent, rock and pop tent, basically. Mellow, medium, and loud.
Yeah.
Sort of the three.
It
wasn't perfectly
though
that.
Though not a perfect separation,
but close,
let me say.
But close.
Because I am pretty sure that on day one, we started with Jericho Harlot, which again had some confusion about which was which.
Right.
But was a good opening act, solidly enjoyed ourselves. They were then followed immediately by Threnodion, the loudest act that I think was featured the entirety of the festival, and also Kara's absolute drop-dead favorite.
Oh, see, I left for Threnodion.
So probably a good thing.
Yeah, that's probably true. I went to see, I think, the loud band Eventides. Or maybe at that point, I may have been going over to the kids' stage where our buddies the Castros were. So our actual real-life friends were playing on a regular stage, then they also played at the kids' stage. Now, I just wanted to point this out. This applies to the Castros and a few other bands that I saw. So remember, one of the cornerstones that we went to was clearly the year of the violin.
Yes.
If you remember that one.
I do.
I saw a lot of mandolins. I don't know if you could place that. I saw a lot of the acoustic duos had a guitar and a mandolin this year. That seemed to be the thing.
And that's a musical theme thing. I'll bet it's also a post-COVID, because a lot of people during the COVID lockdown worked on their acoustic albums since they couldn't get into the studio. And also, easier to travel with you could take your family car instead of your tour bus. And if you didn't have your company, if you didn't have your record label reimbursing your gas, taking a smaller car with fewer instruments and gear
without
made your life a lot easier.
Without needing the extra amps and the bass
and the
drums
and the modulator and the everything.
If you just had the mandolin and the acoustic guitar, you have instruments, can travel.
Yeah.
Now, I do think that the Castros were late to starting their show because as soon as we got there, Marco Castro jumped off the stage to hug your mom.
Yeah.
Because mom knows everybody.
Yeah, she does.
He actually used to work at the church.
Yeah.
According to Marco, it is possible that mom was the first person to ever buy their CD.
I believe so.
Because the one that we have is burned on a CDR from 12 plus years ago, or whatever that would be.
That he burned at the bookstore while he worked there.
Exactly. So we love the Castros, and they have been doing for the last couple years sort of a
migratory van life existence.
Music vagabond. They'll go to down towards Nashville for a little while, up here to Columbus, out to Chicago, and sort of make a circuit living in an RV and singing and playing, and that's sort of, I don't know if how much COVID forced that on some people or if that was an opportunity to take advantage of something that COVID presented in a number of musicians. But
because if I remember sort of how the timeline worked, was it was they were planning on moving to Chicago as their new base of performance.
Right.
And then it was during COVID that they were basically like, this is not feasible as a base to travel out from. It's better to take our base with us.
Right.
And so it sort of transferred because it was two subsequent moves. It was a we're leaving Ohio, and then it was a we're leaving Chicago. And I was like, then where are you going to? And they were like, here's our Sprinter van. Gotta say,
that's like,
it's a nice van. I know two other people who are also looking into that. So.
That's you know, that is another one that is not for me. But
same,
hey, but I respect it.
It seems to be working well with them. Again, being an acoustic duo, if they have Dragon hoodie, box, drum, guitar and ukulele and tiny piano.
You're good. Perfect.
All
that's
all
you need.
It can all fit in
all
a trunk in the car.
We went from there. That's when we got louder with Ignescent. And that was one of the bands I discovered, you know, going through the set list and trying to find them on YouTube or Apple Music. I dug them. Female-led heavy metal band. And there were a couple of those that we saw. I dug Ignescent. Then we went back to Destroy Nate Allen, a.k.a. Good Saint Nathaniel, former guest
of this podcast,
on
indeed.
Dorkness Delight. And that show was the big show for him. He had said he had the rhythm section from Must Build Jacuzzi backing him up. Not the horns. That gets too crowded, as we know. He did not go full ska. That was around dinner break. We all went back to the hotel. I was wiped out.
We had actually left a little bit earlier.
Right.
So we'd already been at the hotel recovering for a little bit, but yeah, Carol was wiped, and then by that point, you were pretty much done.
The problem is, Undercover was playing.
At like 10 p.m.
And this is a reunion show of one of the classic Christian new wave punk bands from the mid-80s doing a reunion show. Your mom had seen them speak earlier in the day and talking about their reunion and getting back together and playing a few shows here and there. And they talked about how now, to use our language, members of the band are currently living in different places under the big Christian tent. So mom had to see them.
Yep.
Fortunately, in these days of modern technology, I have seen much of that show myself.
Indeed.
And this is where the two cars came in handy.
You were toasted. Carol was asleep.
I am not sure how much cajoling we had to do, how much parental pressure you felt, but it was, please take your mommy to the rock show.
Please. She's very sleepy, so she can't drive herself. But also, she really wants to see the men's doing their medium kicks. And playing guitar.
That nice thing is for mom, when she got back from what appeared to be a pretty great show.
It was pretty awesome.
She was done. Like, not wiped out. Like, 1 1/3 days into the fest, and it had been a successful fest. She'd seen her friends, the Castros, Harry Gore, Randy Stonehill, undercover. It's like, that is who she was there for.
Everything else.
Victory. Everything else was extra.
That worked out really solidly. In our case, like I said, we spent a decent amount of time at the hotel, sort of dropping in and out to the fest as needed, but it also meant that we weren't really burning ourselves out.
Yeah,
we were saving ourselves, me and Kara, for Saturday, which was like the main central primary day.
Because without some of those bands that we mentioned who weren't going to make it, really the one maybe known draw for Kara would have been the hip-hop artist and now book author, Propaganda. And you guys went to the book reading, book event, spoken word part of the day.
Last time we went to the festival, you know, the previous festival, which was now 4 years ago, there was a discussion panel where Propaganda was the the guest co-host to the podcast The Liturgists. And they spent a lot of time talking about racial reconciliation and social justice in the church. And it was like just a super amazing, like incredible, wonderful, open talk. Mm-hmm. We just love listening to smart people talk about things that they are very knowledgeable about. Mm-hmm. It was phenomenal.
And about role of women in the church. Yeah, the role of talking about that.
Female leadership and sexism in the church, racism in the church, and how to deal with that sort of history and also build a meaningful future. It's phenomenal, phenomenal stuff. And that was when I'd first heard of Propaganda. I then, when Kara and I, during lockdown, got very, 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 very into the band The Grey Havens.
That's right.
One of their songs, he features on for a guest rap verse. And so then that was how Kara knew Propaganda. So the two of us both knew, like, this is a really crazy smart guy who makes good art. But we didn't know necessarily how those two things gelled independently. Right. I found his book in our store 4 weeks before we were going to go to the show. And I was like, I had no idea that he had this. So when I looked at the schedule, I saw Saturday morning, Propaganda book event for his recently published work, Terraform. Well, regardless of what else I do, I'm going to that.
That is the thing, yeah.
And the question was then, if Kara felt up to it that, quote unquote, early in the morning, would you be able to make it to that? And the answer ended up being no. But you also were doing your own thing.
Right.
Me
so you and
Mom
went to that.
Went to go see him speak. And holy crap, that was amazing. It was a combination of poetry readings from the book, as well as just sort of free-form discussions about the themes. The reason that the book is called Terraform is because it takes the sci-fi concept of terraforming another planet in order to make a place fit for human life and applies it to Earth. So there was a great poem that he wrote in it about, what are we going to do? We're going to go to Mars? Mars is going to end up looking just like here. Mm-hmm. It's going to be another gold rush if we're not careful. This race to space, if we don't get our affairs in order, is just going to be another chance to trash a second planet. We've got to fix Earth before we start thinking about moving out. And I was like, oh!
This is pushing every button.
This is
firing off every synapse.
Every single neuron in my brain is going, because he was talking about things having to do with the environment, but also talking about, again, as a Black man who is in the church, as I learned, a Christian speaker and artist, son of a Black Panther, and living in L.A., he has a very specific experience that he has had, and he brings that into talking about racial justice and reconciliation and what sorts of things need to be addressed by individuals and by groups in order to have, like, a healthy planet, a healthy species, a healthy individual. Like, it's all connected. It's like the water cycle. That there's every individual droplet, every single one of us needs to do our own self-reflection, our own self-care, our own betterment as people because we can't look from outside for a system to make that better. It needs to come from inside.
And the book Terraform, it is written under the name Propaganda. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Just for anyone who's looking it up.
So I highly recommend it. It is going to be my staff pick as soon as we get the 5 copies that I ordered.
Yes!
The book itself is a combination of short stories, essays, poetry, and then is going to be in combination with a sort of concept album project that he's doing. So there's the book, which is itself broken into 4 distinct sections, or like movements, as if it were a symphony. And then he's going to be releasing, and has released in some cases, songs that are counterpoints to that, that like nice. Coincide with that in 4 movements. So it's going to be the 4 albums or collections of singles or 1 multi-part album, you know, sort of however that shakes out as far as like a unit. But the musical act in addition to the book sort of as like nice. Companion pieces.
Right. That's awesome.
Yeah. One of the poems in there, I literally, we went back after having this, you know, great experience. I woke up Kara and I said, I need to read you the first line of this poem. And it's for 12 minutes, we were all on Pangea. And it was talking about the solar eclipse in 2019. Mm-hmm. I was like, that was the point where I was like, this man is brilliant individually, is an incredible artist, and has made something that is legitimately transformative, is terraforming. That was my thing I was most looking forward to, right. And it did not disappoint.
Yes. Now, I was not at that event. I was over at one of the Bible study devotional things, a different one this day. I don't know if you saw the guy wearing the God Loves Scumbags t-shirt.
I did.
He was the Bible study leader. He's a musician, goes by Jeremiah Dirt. And then he started some YouTube Bible studies during COVID, and they asked, well, you're going to come perform. Why don't you come lead some morning Bible studies as well, some devotion? So I did that. Then we had lunch, and then Kara did come after that, because I think that's when we all saw Ravener, which was the other female-led hard music band that I was really interested in. And I really dug the Ravener show.
That was a really great show.
I thought that was
fantastic.
Good.
We were having a great time at Ravener.
Then I bounced around to a couple more shows. I did want to mention one. I caught the end of a guy named Orion Walsh. He was formerly of the Christian emo band Slow Coming Day. And I just wanted to mention him because he said, quote, I just wanted to stop writing sad songs. So they broke up the emo band, and now he does more upbeat and praise and worship and acoustic. He said, I needed to do something happy. I LOL'd out loud at that comment.
A lot of things at this festival were the COVID response. I was locked in for 5.5 months, so I wrote an entire book of poetry about my commentary on the future of the human race. I was locked in by myself for 5.5
months.
And
I say, I broke up my emo band.
And I broke up my emo band. I broke up with my band. I'm sorry. I was too sad. You know, I was in a punk band and I released an acoustic album. I'm still figuring myself out right now. Everyone kind of went through some sort of big character arc during COVID, so this was definitely the reunion of, oh, so what happened to you while you were locked in for 18 months in Somniac Folklore? Oh, you got weirder. Nice.
Good. Or I learned the mandolin. Or I broke up my emo band.
I'm just going to talk about the Oh Hellos just because I love them so much. But like, or I'm the Oh Hellos and we are locked in together. So we are going to write a 4-movement symphony in individual songs for acoustic guitar and mandolin and tiny piano called the 4 Winds Suite. And it's going to be the best music we have ever released in our entire lives. Let me just say, Tamber has been locked in again and has been on the, you know, making ends meet situation. We talked about that last episode. I cannot describe how excited I am to hear some of the music that she has been writing, but not able to produce yet.
Right.
Like, this is the thing, is it's the really super indie, super specialized acoustic acts. We started getting their stuff at the end of 2020, and now as we're moving in towards the middle and end of 2022, I think we're going to be seeing more announcements of the more produced, more like labor-intensive music releases that those artists are getting caught up from. It's the same event. Yeah. The music from it should be coming out soon.
Tambre is the harpist, and many of her songs have closer to full orchestration. You need to be beyond mask mandates and social distancing, and you have to get the musicians together so she can conduct them properly through the process.
Exactly.
Also wanted to mention, this day we saw the full Insomniac Folklore set, which included a anointing oil session, if you wanted to come forward. And, of course, the anointing oil was dyed red, and someone would pray for you and put a cross, red cross. So little ashes / anointing.
An anointing and ashes, a communion equivalent.
And they ended with an epic doxology. That was by far the churchiest event that I was at. And I personally don't always remember Insomniac doing that to that extent, with a hymn, with a praise song, ending with the doxology. So I don't know if that was new for this set or what it was, but that is, they brought it for that one. That was
the high church.
Exactly. And then we went back, and I missed the beginning of this, but you, Mom, and Kara went to the entire performance of Propaganda.
Let me just say, the book is great. The live performance is stellar.
It was about 20 minutes in. I texted, "How you doing?" I think I was watching the uh-ohs. So I was mellowly married couple, goofy acoustic music.
Just vibing.
And you or Mom or someone said, "This is epic."
No, you need to get over here, like, immediately.
I did a couple more songs. Went down, I caught the last 20 minutes or so of Prop, and it was pretty great.
It ruled.
Great performance.
I've got to say, the book reading was the highlight for me. For Kara, it was definitely the performance, because she missed the book reading. But it was the, like, late 90s rap and hip-hop throwback style that she had actually been talking about missing for so long. And people have talked about this, like, we have also poked fun at this before, about Christian music is usually about 8 to 15 years behind what is trendy. Yep. And that's just across the board.
Yep.
But it also does mean that there are certain bands where, because you're not trying to be hip, you are allowed to pick the style that you really like, and you don't necessarily have to keep up with trends.
True.
So Propaganda style is very much throwback kind of vibe. It's very California. It's very, very, very California. And she was having an amazing time. And they also did perform one of the best songs ever, which is just called Gentrify, and has a refrain of all of the things that are moving into your neighborhood, one of them being Whole Foods, which was hysterical, just hearing as they get to the refrain and everybody in the tent just screams, "Whole Foods!"
And in that one poem, I don't think he was just talking about cats and dogs.
No.
Just saying. That show did not end super late, but we were emotionally and physically wiped. So that was I don't know if we went into town for dinner or how that worked out, but that was let's go back and crash. We still have half a day or one more day, because our plan was to leave on the last day, Sunday, at some point, and make it back to Columbus and save two hotel rooms.
Yes.
One night of two hotel rooms.
And just when that morning sort of rolled around, it was our early morning, because it was like, we got to get up and checked out.
Yeah, right.
And so we all ended up getting to the festival pretty early.
That's the one drawback to it being 2 minutes away from the hotel, was, I remember the one morning, this must have been the first morning, there was an 11 o'clock speaker or something. I want to get there. Gets 10:25. Yeah, I should probably, I was in the 10 to 10:31. It's like, what was I thinking? How long did I think it was going to take me to walk? So we got there early. That was more just a sort of roaming around, hanging out. We did see Insomniac Folklore again. They were playing at the kids' stage this time. The nice thing about the kids' stage, they had some picnic tables in the shade.
Yep.
So it was a good place to grab your lunch or grab your snack. I believe that was Deep Fried Oreo Day.
It was, in fact. It was also the day that started with coffee milkshakes. Sorry, coffee floats.
Oh, man.
It was the Barista Boys. Did you want your vanilla bean ice cream with some cold brew on it? Yes. Yes, we did. So it was a round of coffee floats and a Mexican Coke for you.
Admittedly, that was not a bad day.
That was a good start to the day.
That was not a bad day.
That was also the day that our bud tracked down me and Kara and confirmed that we were, in fact, big old nerdesses. And all three of us ended up sitting there. Mom was there for a while, and then she was like, well, the three of you are clearly having a great conversation, so I'm just going to, like, wander off. I think she went and met up with you for Insomniac Folklore.
Yeah.
And we just, like, hung out there, drank our coffee, chilled, had a good old time. Our plan was to try and stay. We realized Castro's wasn't going to happen because the Castro's show was going to be at like 5 p.m.
in the day. Fortunately, we had seen them at the kids' stage, so we had seen them play. We weren't not going to see them officially on a stage, but...
And we got to wave at them, and most importantly, they played our favorite song of the world, Pumpkin Pie.
Yes.
So again, it was we kind of got a lot of our necessities out of the way early on, so we were more freed up for the day.
Now, I need to talk about one performer specifically. This was someone whose hit song, Bottom of the Barrel, is played on our Christian rock radio station here in Columbus, Radio U. And his name is, and it actually is, Rusty Shipp. And he has leaned fully into the Christian nautical rock vibe.
I will say, this was the one person I am sad we missed. Like, we completely missed this, and I was like, we should have stuck around for Rusty Shipp, but I'm pretty sure that it was like 1:55.
Yeah.
And it was like, can we make it there? And it hit noon on the dot, and we both looked at each other, and we're just like, we got to go.
But we had seen him earlier in the week in his merch area, and Mom and I had each bought a t-shirt. We were looking at the t-shirts, got the cool nautical design. That's one of our things.
Yeah.
One of the shirts he was looking at, it got two stories about your mom. We're talking to him, and he said, you know, this shirt glows in the dark. Mom said, you know, you should put a sign that says this shirt glows in the dark. And I think they had her size. I think she eventually got one. Then we went back later in the day. There's a sign up on the shirt, glows in the dark. I said, yes. So we went to see Rusty Shipp. That was going to be our last full show, was going to be Rusty Shipp. But we got to that stage a little early. And we're going to see a younger band called Pray for Sleep. And the reason we had to see them was that one of the guys in the band, their mom, was at the fest and knows Mom. Because we cannot take Mom 300 miles away where she finds someone she knows from church. Like, we were in small group together. We did Bible study 9 years ago.
Okay.
I remember her.
Dad?
How does she...
Dad, she knows Mrs. Mumford of Sons fame.
I know. We shouldn't be surprised at this point.
We can't take her anywhere.
I know. So, we saw Pray for Sleep. It was a pretty good loud screamo band whose mom was at the show because she knows... Mom and
hysterical, absolutely hilarious.
Then we saw the epic Rusty Shipp with the awesome Down at the Bottom of the Barrel song, which I believe we will play some point during this episode. You'll know it because it's the one with the word bioluminescence in it. Now, the one event that you missed that me and Mom caught wafting as we walked to our car to leave was we did not see, but we heard the ska show. We heard Must Build Jacuzzi. We have become skinoculated. So we are okay for the next few years on our ska.
What's good for me, as we said, we did two cars. Because usually it would be the two of you plus me, three people sharing the driving. This time it was the two of you sharing driving and me driving the whole way on my own. And it was solidly doable. It was long. Five and a half hours.
Four and a half one way, six and a half the other way, because there's a time change.
And it was something I was like, you know what, actually, that was long. But I was really worried I would like burn myself out on the travel.
Yeah.
And it is part of why we ended up leaving, you know, 8 hours earlier.
So you could get plenty of time. You were working the next day.
I was working the next day. So we ended up leaving, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours earlier than we kind of intended to. Right. But aside from that, like, it was solidly doable. It means that just depending on who's going next year, it might just be me, Kara, hotel room, and then go see Muscle Jacuzzi, maybe Coyote Kid. Depending, it doesn't even necessarily have to be a whole thing.
Right.
If there are only 2 days that we want to see, we could drive on one day. We could be there for a day and a half. We could drive back.
And
it can be an extended weekend.
I do think the thing I'm going to try to do next time, because it had been so many years, it was small, but there were bands that I wanted to see. So I did a lot of running from tent to tent, and the tents aren't far away.
Right.
But it's hot, and you're carrying a chair. It's something. I think next time we go, I'm just going to look at the schedule and say, this session, I'm going to the metal tent for these 3 hours, these four bands. Then I'm going to go to the mellow tent, and then I'm going to go to the rock tent, and hopefully I'm going to go to the goth tent here and do a little more settled in one location. Because that was my vision of what we've done in the past.
I was going
to
say,
we would set up the chairs for 3 hours and listen to whoever is playing on those stages.
And that was very much our vibe up until that point. But it was this time around, I feel like there really was a sort of manic energy of like, but I don't want to miss anything.
Right. We have to get here. We have to get to these.
I've seen 35 minutes of this act, and they're really good. But also, there's another act starting in 5 minutes, and I want to get at least half of theirs. And then I want to get at least half of this person's, and I want to get 20 minutes of this person. And if I get there early to this one, I can talk to the artist.
I think that's a good way of saying it. It was smaller, but somehow it was more exhausting.
Yeah.
I think because it had been so long. And I think you're right. There was a manic expectation or intention to get the most fast in this time. I have to do it.
It was really good because it had been so long.
But it was really good. Let's hone in for a second on the discovery aspect, because that is one of the fun things about a small, tiny, obscure festival. We talked about the fact that, you know, a lot of the labels that are normally there were not there this time, which meant that most of the people were there are not on a label at all. And I want to say this to Garrett Godfrey. I am 100% sure. I want to confirm it from you, Em. I did not hear a single band mention an upcoming crowdfunding Kickstarter. And I think maybe that's part of the not having a label, not having the organization, not having that sort of management, and or even though a few fests are back, maybe that whole big touring thing is not back. Because if you're going to do a Kickstarter or crowdfunding, you need to have 25 shows in 30 nights to a couple hundred people each where you can attend, you know, the numbers have to be there even if you're just looking at $2,000, $3,000, $4,000.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, that was specifically noticeable that there was not a single postcard for support our crowdfunding. Here's our Indiegogo. Here's our Kickstarter.
Ravener did say they had just released a new single, but that was the closest.
That was about the closest we had to something upcoming and something like new.
Promotional.
Yeah. And that was, that. I think probably Ravener was probably my favorite musical discovery of the event. Is there anyone else that you want to give a shout out to or a re-shout out to?
Yeah, because I talked about them briefly, but Threnodian really was, it was purely based on the name. This was Kara's observation, was Threnodian, like Threnodes, which is, in Dragon Age, hello, their equivalent of the Book of Lamentations.
Oh, that is a deep nerd cut.
Yes, it is.
I mean, that has to be. I mean, that is. Is that the reference?
Well, and that's the thing is, that was on our end. We were like, well, I guess that's what. But it's literally just a synonym. That a Threnodian is a wailing song of lamentation. So instead of calling themselves Lamentations, they went, you know, one step further into with this very esoteric synonym. But it was enough to catch our attention. And it absolutely ruled. A thing that happens sometimes with loud musical artists, the performers are able to be loud. They are not necessarily able to sing. They are different skills. Mm-hmm. And it's a thing that we talked about on our Mara and the Mainsail review album about the fact that Dury sings the songs the way he does because he wants to, not because he can't sing anything else. Same is true for Threnodian, because Threnodian is full, straight up, genuine screamo. They did actually break the sound system at one point. They did get to the end of a song and they did have to take a quick reset because they did blow an amp. Sometimes that can just be the appeal. It's just, well, it's very loud. But the songs would drop occasionally. You could really hear the performance, the singing, the skill. And the moment that I knew it was going to be a good show was when the lead got up and was doing his warm-ups into the microphone. I was like, that is a dude who takes care of his voice, which means that what we listen to is going to be loud. It is going to be good. And it was amazing. So that was our favorite act and surprise highlight, I think. Threnodian, if you want some full-blown. It is straight up the emo, sad, I am wailing from the depths of my soul, hardcore, loud catharsis.
Nice.
And it was excellent.
Nice. We have awesome listeners who regularly send us awesome feedback. It's time to go through our bag of emails, faxes, and notes. And our friend Gene Hendricks wrote in a message with the subject line, "Darkness to Light is back! Huzzah!"
M and the Prof. Thanks. I really needed another podcast to put into my to-listen-to pile, he says, voice dripping with sarcasm. So exploring Lord of the Rings has now been added.
Oh, Gene, I'm sorry, man. I am so sorry.
Hey, it's those moments where you go, here's my recommendation. Don't.
Don't take it.
Don't take it.
But, I mean, come on.
It's like, I know I'm into it, but what sort of freak are you? On a more serious note, the idea of a forgery being too good is actually pretty historically accurate. I recently rewatched Ken Burns' The Civil War, which I do every couple years or so. And one of the points that was made in there was towards the end of the war, Confederate currency was being counterfeited, but they were easy to tell, because the real bills were of a far inferior quality. So the father's skepticism over a newly found letter rings absolutely true. I do have a question for the two of you as religious geeks. Have you ever come across a property that you just can't watch, or just leaves a bad taste in your mouth because the hero is the evil one? I ask because this was my experience with the Loki series. I'm sorry, but no matter how much they tell me to root for him, I'm not going to be able to because he causes Ragnarok. For more on my feelings towards that show, check out Back to the Bins 474.
Impressive, Gene. Impressive.
I look forward to your thoughts on the topic. I can't think of any directly off the top of my head where this is the case, but I do sometimes have eye-rolly things, more so where the church is the bad guys, or sometimes where angels are the bad guys. I kind of roll my eyes about those.
Partially because it's been done so many times.
That's the thing.
It's a trope.
It's honestly, it's that more so. And this is a thing I've talked about at some length on Twitter, is I don't care if you like characters or concepts or story themes that I don't, or vice versa. I don't care if you dislike the things I love. I just want you to hate them correctly.
For the right reasons.
Like, I want you to understand them. And so a lot of times things like that come through very, very shallow. And it's like, ooh, wouldn't this be cool and edgy if actually God was the bad guy? Because the closest thing I could think of was, like, Legion.
Mm-hmm.
Which had a whole entire Doug Jones in it.
Yeah.
Because it's actually a notably theologically sound, interesting science fiction premise. So long as the premise is sound, I'm usually not mm-hmm. bothered by it. It's when it comes across as a very easy shortcut. Yeah. I think we've talked about this on, like, representation episode discussions of talking about, like, oh, and then there's going to be a priest. And the reaction from whoever the editor or producer mm-hmm. is, and it's like, oh, okay, and then he's going to, like, you know, turn out to be the villain. No, he's just a nice guy.
Yeah, but what's the angle? I mean,
yeah,
what's the angle? When's he going to turn?
Yeah.
Well, it's just those tropey expectations.
Yeah, because a lot of, and that's, I guess it's the thing about Christianity being a majority religion.
Right.
Because you can view it in a more, hilariously, a more mythological context.
Right.
That you can say, well, this is about the concept of Satan. And the concept of Satan exists everywhere in literature. The literary Satan and the theological Satan are so divorced from each other, not by a concept of decades, to say, well, this is Loki, the comic character.
Right.
That's, you know, 50 years, as opposed to here is Satan as appears in Shakespeare, which was 500 years ago.
Right.
There is that built-in distinction because it's a dominant religion. It's almost more secular.
It's more part of culture.
Yeah.
Some of the ideas and the concepts. I'll just say, I really enjoyed the first season of Warrior Nun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not theologically sound, but...
Or like Dark Ark. I really want to read Dark Ark.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, but you're rooting for the bad guys. I'm like, yeah, but those...
In a very fictional...
And the fictionalized is so far removed. So that there's this massive gulf.
That's the John Milton Paradise Lost problem.
Yeah.
Man, did he create a compelling Satan that you really want to root for, because he's just such a cool fictional character. And I think that's part of the distinction that you have to make.
Yeah. I will say this one, though. I have definitely chucked things at the wall.
Right.
Because they had bad representations of Jesus, though.
Yeah.
That one I have definitely.
I think I've talked about that before. I'm more forgiving about portrayals of the church or portrayals of even of God. Portrayal of Jesus is where you're cutting really close. And no, I'm not going to participate in this.
The
goes
personal
up at that point. Yeah.
The personal squick
thanks.
kicks in there. Again, speaking for myself, it's much about the misrepresentation. It's when you're saying, this is my interpretation of, that I go like, well, but you are fundamentally willfully ignorant about this. You are not doing this on purpose. You're being dumb.
But no, I got this right out of the Book of Revelations. Okay, you've lost me.
You've lost me again.
Aunt Jean ended by saying he was glad that we were back and glad that you are in a better place career-wise and mental health-wise.
Thank you. Thank you, Jean. It's good to be back. I have slowly, over the course of the last 3 months, been sort of having moments where I take a moment and reevaluate and be like, oh, I feel normal again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is nice. This is a nice change of pace.
Amen. And we heard from Mark Baker Wright. He said it was good to catch up with us at Gallifrey One back in February. He said, thanks for this return to ordinary time. Specifically following up after your previous comments a few episodes back. As a former seminary student, which I think is one of our leading audience demos, I think.
Yeah, probably.
I especially enjoyed the discussion of the short story, 3 Corinthians. I need to find that and read it for myself. As Alan suggested, there were some themes in it I've seen done elsewhere. I was especially reminded of the Star Trek Next Generation novel, Kallus, written by Michael Jan Friedman, which specifically follows the repercussions of the discovery of ancient texts that throw the Klingon faith into question. I have seen that book before, It's possible it has gone through my fingers at various points, but I don't think I've read it. I am moving it higher up the list now.
That is also a theme in Dragon Age Inquisition. Yes, oh. I got two of them in today.
Bam.
About rediscovering historical cultural context and what that means for modern faith and practitioner. I would not hate doing a two-part special on recontextualized religion.
Nice. Mark said, the twist at the end of the story and the explicit discussion of the process of Christian canonization made this story sound very much up his alley. Said, I'm glad things are returning to a semblance of normal for both of you and look forward to our next meeting whenever and wherever that happens to be.
Agreed.
Yes. And of course, we heard from Dave McElvaney.
Thank you both. It was good to hear your voices again. You were certainly some of what I've missed during the recent prolonged Lent.
Yes.
And I'm glad you both seem to have come through it and out the other end, at least to some extent. Thanks, too, for 3 Corinthians. That was most excellent. I must say, I guessed the twist pretty early, but that did not in any way diminish my enjoyment. Thanks especially for your listeners who sent in feedback on your episodes. I always enjoy hearing what others have to say about the podcast.
So do we.
It's all in big discussion. Finally, yes indeed, we Catholics are weird. I dare say we're often better at weirdness because we've been doing it so long.
I think our official dorkness to light position is that Catholics are like Portland. Both are better when they're weird.
Agreed.
Feature, not a bug. So, thank you all. We love you all for listening. We know that this show occupies a small niche within a small niche, and we value each and every one of you.
So wherever you come, outside the Christian world, or from anywhere inside that very large tent, you can come here. All are welcome.
Until next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
While you're waiting for the next podcast episode, check out our websites. DorknessToLight.blogspot.com contains reviews, essays, and other similar ramblings.
And DorknessToLight.tumblr.com, which contains some of that material, as well as top tens, cool photographs, memes, and religious puns. We also run a general interest comic book podcast network, Relatively Geeky. That content can be found at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or by searching iTunes for Relatively Geeky.
Let us know what you think of this topic, this episode, or this podcast in general. Feel free to send your thoughts to us at dorknesstolight@gmail.com. We would also appreciate any ratings or reviews left for the podcast in the iTunes store to help like-minded people find us.
Our intro, outro, and promo music is all provided by Anderson Kale. Search for them online to listen to or purchase their music.
Thanks for listening.
They do serve the best curly fries in existence.
They are pretty fresh. You watch them.
They cut a potato into hot oil and then they fish it out and hand it to you. And
it's pretty fresh. Pretty fresh. You do what you want.
Me do my dumb joke.
You are 2/3 of this team. I did it by popularity. I'm 2/3 by age. I'm 2/3 by weight.
I am 2/3 by popularity.
Wait a minute.
Hang on now.
I'm not afraid to
Booyah!